You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Allison Renborg in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And you are listening to the monthly Equine Affair episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Thursday, September the 18th. Oh, my God. Episode 3778. This episode is brought to you by Equine Affair. Good morning, Horse World.
It's the third Thursday of the month. That means it's time for the Equine Affair episode, North America's premier equine expo and equestrian gathering.
I saw you said, oh my God, when you saw September 18th, that means you're less than 2 months away from the next Equine Affair in Massachusetts.
Oh yeah, less than 2 months. It's heating up around here. So here's the thing about my job. Everybody knows it's cyclical. We have the two events. And so usually in summer, there's a little bit of a cooling off period after April before we start going down the road to November. And so this year I was like, I am not going to get lulled into complacency. I am going to jump right into Massachusetts. And I did. I was working really hard. I didn't cool off any. I just went. But it's 2 months away, and I'm like, crap, I still have all this stuff to do.
See, that's what happens. That's what happens. It doesn't matter how hard you work, there's always more work.
That's true. Yeah. I do feel a little more prepared, so like I'm glad, but part of me is also like, why didn't I take the cool down period when I had it?
Well, that is coming up, so people right now can buy tickets, they can get their hotels and all of that on the website.
Yes, they can. Our host hotels are up there. Our tickets are up there. You can get your single days, your 4 days, and your Fantasia tickets. And I believe you can also get your advanced parking passes again. I know Eastern States has been working on getting that back up, and it was such a hit last year. We are working on getting that link back up again, so it'll definitely be live before the show gets here. So if you want to get your parking pass early, you can do that.
Very good. And I've been having several listeners over the last week for some reason came out of the woodwork to ask me if I will be there. I will not be at Equine Affair in Massachusetts, but Allison will. You'll see her run around.
I'll be there, but yeah. Glenn won't come where it's cold.
That's right. So. I live in Florida. It's finally going to be a weather we can go outside in Florida. So it's like,
yes.
So
he
I'm
doesn't
want
to see
here.
The snow.
No, I've lived in Massachusetts before, and we had when we moved out that winter, we had 90 inches. And that was it.
That's
I was
a lot.
Done. Yeah, I was done with snow for a while. So
it wasn't all at once, though, was it?
Well, one of the blizzards was like 40 inches. It was something
wow.
else. We lived in a townhouse and we couldn't get out the door. They had to come around and shovel our doors so people could get out of the house. Was that bad?
Well, yeah.
Now, okay, you, speaking of nature, had an experience.
I did. So, yeah. So my husband and I, we decided to go on a little weekend getaway to the Smokies because it's right. I mean, I basically call the hills around Nashville and Murfreesboro the baby Smokies because they do smoke a little bit. But we decided to go to the real Smokies. So we went south of Knoxville. We took our daughter. We had a great time. But it was a cabin out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, it was in a neighborhood, but like we were really secluded. So we could see one other cabin across the lake. So, I mean, we were up there, like, you know, it was nature. It was lovely. And before people come for me, yes, I know it's bear country. Like, I'm born and raised in Middle Tennessee. East is where the bears are. West is where Memphis is. I know these things. So
Elvis West, bears east. That's how it goes.
Alabama South, Kentucky North. Okay, that's geography. Now, so I knew it was bear country. No problem. We get there. We get checked into our cabin. It's wonderful. We do some playing outside. We put the baby down, and then my husband and I are sitting up late talking in the living room. Now, to set the scene for you, we have all the lights on in the cabin and outside the cabin because we're looking at the lake, and we have a deck, and we have French glass doors and a huge window on either side. So like basically half the wall between us and the lake is glass. That's fine. It's lovely during the day. So that night we're sitting there and we're talking. And I look over and I realize beyond the reflections in the glass, I see something on the deck. And I go, what is that? And Ryan looks over and he's like, I don't know. I don't see anything. So I get up and I very sneakily go over and I turn off the light switch inside so that I can see better through the window. And it's a freaking bear on the deck.
Looking in at you going, where's dinner?
Yes. Now, this is not a baby bear.
Did you have the doors open? Were the doors open?
No, thank God. Everything was closed, but I mean, it was glass. And he's sitting there. He had been checking out the grill, which we had not used. It was still covered. But he, and not only did he come up on the deck, he came up a whole narrow flight of stairs to get onto the deck. So this was not some wide open patio. Like, he came up to a second story deck to check out the grill. And it was just like, okay, so you're used to doing this. This is what
you do. After everybody moves out, he moves in and checks the grill.
Yes. And so we go, oh, no. And we just stand there and watch him. And then he turns around and it's a full grown bear, guys. Like, I would think his back was my waist height. Like, this was a big bear, bigger than I've ever seen in person. And he ambles down off the deck when he realizes we're looking at him. And we're like, OK, what are we going to do? Because we just weren't prepared for bear. And then also the cabin was an A-frame, so there were no windows on the sides of the cabin. So we ran to the front and we're peering through the windows around the door, and the bear has decided to cross in front of the house. And so we're standing there saying things like, you know, you can imagine the expletives that we're saying, just like, what do we do? Is there any food in the car? Because, like, we weren't thinking about
cars.
That. Yes. And it was a rental car, too. And so my husband is like, I don't know if insurance covers bear attacks on cars. And so we're talking, and the bear turns and looks at us. And we both go, oh, crap. And then he goes, meh. And he just moves along and disappears, and we never saw him again.
There you go. There was no food. He was going to the next cabin.
Thank goodness. But we were a little panicked because we had left like a fast food bag in the car that had like remnants. And so all that night we're like, I hope that bear is not just like having a party with the car. So the next morning, once it was daylight, Ryan ran out there and the car was fine. But that really showed us why the trash in the locked bin up at the top of the driveway was so important, and maybe not going out after dark while we're there. So yeah.
You didn't, did you? You didn't go out after dark, did you? We're watching stars those nights.
No. But you know, the next night we went to there was a balcony on the top floor, and we're like, I kind of hope the bear comes back so we can be on the balcony and look down at him and see him a little closer. So it was kind of like Santa Claus. We kept looking out the window going, is the bear going to come back? Because like, it's kind of fun, but it's also kind of terrifying.
He probably has a route, you know, cabin to cabin to cabin to cabin, because I'm sure people leave stuff out all the time.
Well, you know, and the next day when we were walking around looking for bear prints, I saw pistachio shells that a former guest, I guess, had thrown out into the yard. So it's like, this is why we can't have nice things, people.
Sorry. It's a bear with expensive tastes, pistachios.
Yeah. So practice bear safety when you go to the Smokies, guys. It's not a joke. They will come. They do want to eat what you have. And don't leave food in your car.
We've rented cabins many times up in Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge area. And the one we rented, I said, well, this is a great view. And it was on top of a mountain. And but the problem was, we got to the bottom of the mountain, and the road, literally, we waited for another car to go up because we thought it was too steep to climb in our car. It was like straight up. And it was like, I'm not driving up there until somebody goes up ahead of us. And then what happened is this pickup work truck went up ahead of us and he just gunned it. I mean, you could hear his engine the whole way up the mountain. And it was literally straight up. And then we get up there. Okay. Then we tried gunning it, right? To get up the hill in our rental car, I think we had at the time. And we get up there, and then the driveway off to this A-frame on the side of the mountain, you had to pull off the steep road onto this somewhat flat driveway that's as narrow as the car. car. And I said to Jennifer, how are we going to get back out onto the road that is pointed straight down from this driveway? We had to back onto the road and up back up the hill, hoping that nobody was coming. So what we did is we would listen. And before we backed out, we would listen for a car coming up the hill. You heard them because they had to rev it so hard to get up the hill. And yeah. we also listened for cars coming down the hill, because if we had backed out on either one, we'd been dead. She hated that, Kevin. She just hated it.
You know, it was quite the windy hairpin 1.5 lane road getting up there. So like, I was really glad it wasn't as steep as yours, but I was like, it's good that we went and got groceries and are just going to stay here, because I would not want to drive up and down the mountain after dark trying to get, headache medicine.
Exactly how you feel. Next cabin, we stayed a little lower. We stayed down in the valley. It's like, okay, I had the view. I didn't like that. Let's do the valley. That's funny.
And we were also glad we got a rental car, because we were like, we were smart. This was smart, because I didn't want to trust my brakes on the mountain, and you needed good brakes.
Yes, we did. Well, as volunteers, I know you're always looking for volunteers. Any still needed for November? Yep.
Yes, absolutely. And hey, Tennessee is a volunteer state, y'all. Yes. If you want to volunteer and get free admission, the deadline to sign up in advance is September 26th. And you can still volunteer if you don't make the sign up. You just won't have your name in the program and might be a little harder to pick shifts. But I mean, we're still going to work around your schedule as much as you can. So I definitely recommend sign up in advance. But if you don't and you want to volunteer at the event, just come and we'll send you to the volunteer office and get you taken care of. But if you want to sign up early, the application's on the website. We'll put it in the show notes and we would love to have you. And if you work for, I think it's just 2 hours, you get admission for the day. And if you want a 4-day pass, you just work for 2-hour shifts, so 8 hours total, and you get a free 4-day pass. And we don't work you too hard. We do, it's fun stuff. It's like handing out programs, moving boxes, easy stuff. And then you get free admission. So can't get much better than that.
Very good. And is the raffle still going on too?
Oh, yes. So the raffle, which is my baby, everyone knows, it is open until the end of the event on November the 9th. So you can enter anytime. You don't even have to come to the event to enter. And you don't have to be there to win, of course. We select the winners afterward. And the odds are pretty good of winning something great. You've got 29 chances to win something this year. So I made sure we had a lot of great prizes. So we've got prizes from Fire Horse Rescue Kits. We've got custom equestrian mirrors, free horse feed, so that comes in handy. Supplements from the Healing Cowgirl and Sound Science Nutrition, a prize pack from US Equestrian, and of course, free tickets to Equine Affair in 2026. So,
and they go to the website to sign up?
Yes, they do. We have a raffle link on there. You go, you fill out a little survey, and then you're entered.
Okay, very good. So you don't even have to come. You can live in California and win.
Yes, ideally we want you to come.
But if you live in California, you can still win. Well, before we get to our first guest, Dr. Erin Roddy, who regular listeners to Horses in the Morning, Jamie and I will know. She's our regular guest on here, and today she's going to talk to us about how to read a feed label, and that's something that I don't think I've ever done. But then again, that I leave that to Jennifer. So that's not, but it's not horse husband job. That's horse wife job. But one of the things you can do is keep flies in check with Chewy, from fly sprays and masks to sheets, boots, traps, and even feed-through supplements. You'll find everything you need to keep your horse comfortable all season long. And I know we still have flies down here, and I know you do in Tennessee. Shop trusted favorites like Ultra Shield and Simplify, plus tons of other top-rated brands in the fly world. Whether you're protecting your horse in the pasture or keeping your barn a fly-free zone, Chewy makes it easy. Fast, free shipping on orders over $49 and all your go-to fly control essentials in one place. For a fly-free season, for the brands you trust, for fast delivery, there's Chewy. Go to chewy.com/equine. That's chewy.com/equine.
Well, as Glenn said, our next guest is Dr. Erin Roddy from Poseidon Animal Health. Dr. Roddy and the Poseidon Animal Health team will be at Equine Affair in Massachusetts, so we just had to invite Dr. Roddy to come on and talk to us about feed labels. So let's hear from Dr. Roddy. Well, welcome to the show, Dr. Aaron Roddy. You are a bit of a celebrity in Horses in the Morning world, and so we're excited to have you on the Equine Affair episode.
Thanks so much, Allison. Happy to be here. I love hanging out with Horses in the Morning and all my friends.
She's at the airport signing autographs right now. Right now. They're lined up.
Yeah, I've had to pause the line. I had to pause the line of fans so that I can talk to you guys.
Say, hold it. I've got Glenn and Allison on line one. Okay.
Exactly.
And
right.
You are going, exactly. And you just told us you're going to Lexington. So you're going to horse country.
Yep, I am flying to Lexington today. There's a big battle. You know, I live in Ocala, and Ocala calls itself the horse capital of the world. And somehow Lexington also calls itself the horse capital of the world. So I just like to keep one foot in each place so that nobody gets offended.
Aaron, did you know they sued each other years ago?
I did not know.
Yeah, there was a big court. It went to court, and the judge ruled they can both call themselves horse capital of the world. That's what
good
he ruled.
Ruling. I hope he deliberated on that for a long time. That seems very important.
So who sued who?
Lexington sued Ocala.
Yeah, I guess they would. They're a litigious bunch up in Kentucky.
They didn't have enough bourbon that day, I guess.
Right. I would think that you, maybe this is just the marketer in me, but you would just take that as an opportunity to come up with a different cool name
slogan
for yourself.
Yeah, well, you could be horse capital of the universe or best horse capital or something slightly different, but it's really important to be the horse capital of the world. It's okay. There are worse things to be fighting over, I guess.
Well, speaking of dry legal documents, how you like that segue? I was thinking we should talk about how to read a feed label, because you are coming to Equine Affair. You're going to be doing a bunch of great presentations on educational topics, but one of them is reading feed labels. And a feed label is a legal document, isn't it?
It absolutely is. It is telling you what is in that bag of horse feed. And as boring and dry as it might sound, it's actually really important to know what's in your feed and what you're feeding and why you're doing that. And I think a lot of people don't even know where to start and don't realize how deceptive that feed label can be. So it's something I always like to talk to people about. And I always get a few people that are completely shocked by how misrepresentative the feed label can be and how simple it can be to figure out the difference between a good bag of feed and a bad one.
Well, I always look at the protein percentage. Is that the right way to start, or am I just totally off base?
No, I like to start with the protein. It helps us at the top of the list. That's a good place to start.
Well,
is it Alice in Wonderland that says that you start at the beginning and go till the end? It's always a good way to tell
secret.
A story. But yeah, we want, you know, for your average adult horse, about 12 to 14% protein is correct. If a horse isn't in work, even 10% is okay. But what's interesting about protein is it really matters what the source of the protein is. So you can have a bag that says 14% protein, and we think, oh, we're swimming. This is plenty of protein for my horse. But if the source of that protein isn't a good quality protein source, or if it's a combination of a bunch of sources, the horses actually aren't going to get the amino acids that they need. And that's the important part of protein, is the amino acids. They're our building blocks for everything. Our muscles, our bones, our cartilage, our joint tissue, even our gut wall, which we know how I love to talk about gut health, that requires amino acids to repair. So it's really important that we have the crucial amino acids for horses, and that comes from the quality of our protein source, not always just the percentage. So that's where we get a little bit deeper into the ingredients and not just the number.
And so you mentioned if it came from like a bunch of different sources. So is it better if it only comes from like one source?
Ideally, yeah, we want to look for a really clean protein source. So I actually really like soybean meal. A lot of people can get funny about soybean meal, but I really like soybean meal. Or we can use protein from peas. There's a lot of different sources of protein. Alfalfa meal is a really good source of protein for horses. But if we start getting into a bunch of different kinds of hulls or a number of different protein sources, sometimes you'll see things like cotton meal. Certainly we want to avoid our cereal grains like corn and oats and barley as too much of our protein, because that comes with a lot of accompanied starch. Then you might have 14% protein, but if it's from cotton meal and grapeseed meal and the hulls of wheat or corn, that's not as good for the horse, even though that number is actually correct. We're not going to have those amino acids in the good quality that we need. So it is a little bit more than just the number. I can see a 10% protein from straight soybean meal that is going to do a lot more for my horse than 14% that might come from, say, cottonseed meal.
And when you said alfalfa, my brain kind of went, oh no, but like, because I've had easy keepers who are like, they get fat on air, but is that something I should worry about if I see it and it's alfalfa?
I'm alfalfa's biggest fan. I've got my line of fans. I'm always number one in the line of alfalfa. Alfalfa is a great feed for horses. It's got a perfect protein composition for them. Really good source of amino acids. Now, our easy keepers, we have to be a little careful how much alfalfa we feed them, but I like to see alfalfa at about 25 to 30% of the diet. And normally when I look at a diet and people are worried about alfalfa, I often find a lot of sources of starch and sugar that I can pull out of the diet. So our horses do not need starch and sugar any more than we people need starch and sugar. And we can put alfalfa in as a better source of protein for the horse. So certainly not straight alfalfa, but about 25 to 30% of the diet does a really good job in terms of protein composition.
I like that. So it's almost like with people, your complex starch, like, yeah, maybe not white potatoes, but maybe sweet potatoes. And so with horses that are easy keepers, alfalfa, better alfalfa than a whole bunch of other stuff.
Better alfalfa than any kind of cereal grain, corn, oats, barley. If it was me, I'd never feed it to a horse. So I would much prefer to see alfalfa than that. And remember, it's funny, you know, I talk to a lot of people that are worried about what's in their grain. And I mean, most people don't feed more than 5 or 6 pounds of grain to a horse, but then they might feed 15, 20, 30 pounds of hay, and they don't even think about the analysis of their hay or the protein composition of their hay or the sugar components of their hay. So we can get really wrapped up in, you know, I have people that come from like, oh, my ration balancer is 30% protein. Is that too much for my horse? Like, well, your horse is getting a pound of ration balancer. They're getting 30 pounds of hay. So we're much more concerned about the protein component of our hay than our ration balancer, just for a comparison. But people like, because they can read the label on the bag, they get really wrapped up in that. But your hay is actually, I wish more hays came with a label. That's what I'm always trying to encourage people to do, is buy your hay from somewhere that it's analyzed. And so you actually know what's going on in your hay.
That would be so much easier if it came with a label, like if they're baling the hay in the field and like we just... That's okay. It's a new product. Okay. So we get a hay analyzer that as the baler works, it spits out a label and then you know exactly what's in your hay and everything is perfect. You know,
there are good hay producers that do that. And it's actually, it costs about $30 to have a hay analysis done. Yeah. So any feed store can easily do that. And people just need to be a little bit firmer about asking for it. It's not hard to do. It's not expensive to do. And when you're talking about a hay or feed store that might have bought 10,000 bales of hay, $30 to have it analyzed is really not much in terms of outlay. So it's just about kind of, you know, we vote with our dollars. Say, I want analysis on this hay. If I'm going to buy it, I want to know what it looks like in terms of protein and starch and all those other good things.
I love that. That's a huge, it's such a great point. It's like, what are we feeding our horses more of? The hay. What do we tend to just look at and we go, hey, this hay looks nice. It's green. It's the second cutting. It'll be fine. You know? And it's like, no, we need to definitely vote with our dollars, pay for that analysis, figure out what you're feeding them, because
absolutely.
Yeah.
I have like people that come to me and say, oh, my horse can't eat Timothy. It has too much starch. I've seen Timothys that are incredibly low in starch and sugar. And I've seen orchard grasses that are low in starch and sugar. It depends so much on the soil it's grown, how it's cut, how it's baled, how it's stored. You cannot say that one type of hay is going to be always X composition. It is so variable. And without an analysis, you really have no idea. You're just guessing. And you're guessing with the biggest, what we hope is the biggest component of your horse's diet.
100%. You're so right. So in addition to protein, what's the next thing we should look at on the feed label besides?
I like to move on to the fat. You know, horses can tolerate a lot of fat. And certainly if you have a horse that is a hard keeper, a bit more fat in your feed is going to help you. Now, if you have a horse that's an easy keeper, you're going to want to avoid fat. I do think we have to be a little careful. In the US, you know, we sort of decided that horses can process a lot of fat, and they certainly can, but I do see people overdo it. And horses will actually kind of self-limit themselves on how much fat they'll consume. So a lot of times if I feel like a horse is backing away from the feed bowl or they're not finishing all of their feed, we often find that it's actually got too much fat in it. And when we go to a slightly lower fat feed, they will finish it. And of course, if they're not eating it, it's not doing you a very good job. So a very high fat feed that your horse isn't eating is going to be worse than a lower fat feed that they actually do eat. So looking at that fat component, you know, if you have a good keeper, you don't want to be feeding a senior feed that might be 10 or 12% fat. That's going to be too much for your horse. If you have a performance horse that you need to put some more fat on, that's probably a good starting point, is to look at that fat component, but always keep an eye on your horse and how much they're willing to process. Start with protein and fat. And then the next thing I go to is looking at, I actually go to the ingredient list. It's really, you know, that ingredient list is a legal document. And one of the things that's really important to see is that your feed is made to a set recipe. So there's a couple different ways people can do feed labels. They can do a set recipe or a variable recipe. And a variable recipe, which sometimes can be called a regional recipe, means that there might be 10 ingredients in that feed, but depending on what's inexpensive at the time, they might use way more corn if corn is inexpensive right now, or they might use way more cottonseed meal if cottonseed meal is inexpensive right now, or if vegetable oil is inexpensive, they might use a lot more of that. So that means that each bag of feed could actually be different than the last one that you buy, and that's not good for the horse. So I always recommend companies that make their feed to a set recipe so that each bag is going to be consistent bag to bag, and you know exactly what you're getting in that bag. That's really important.
Well, because I could imagine if it was variable and the bags of feed varied so much, couldn't that open us up to like a stomach ache or colic or something like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it certainly affects the microbiome. Like our bacteria and our horse's hindgut learn to process certain types of feed. And then if you change that, they aren't getting the food that they need and they'll actually die. So it's really important. Mm-hmm. We like variety in our horse's diet, but we like that variety consistently. We certainly don't want one bag of feed to be high in corn and the next bag of feed to have no corn and the next bag of feed to have a lot of corn in it again. We want that to be the same. And that's why we always want to adjust a diet slowly. But if you think you're getting the same bag and you're feeding it always the same, but it's actually changing within itself, then that's going to be a really rough adjustment for your horse's GI tract.
Now, does the feed label say set recipe or variable, or how do you know?
Yes, so that language will be on the feed label and on the bag. So you're always looking for a set recipe, and you'll also be able to go on the company's website and they'll tell you. If they cook to a set recipe, they're going to make a big deal out of it because it's important, and it costs them extra because ingredients do go up and down in price. And if they're stuck to that set recipe that they always use soybean meal gets really expensive, they're going to make less money on that bag of feed, but they're set to that recipe and they're holding themselves to that standard.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's such a, I never even thought about that. And I don't remember knowing that there's set and there's variable, but you know, maybe it's just like, hopefully I've just been feeding set recipes all this time, but that's so cool.
It's just about getting a little bit more, you know, taking a little more responsibility for what we're doing. You know, I think I often talk to customers and clients and they say, oh, well, if they say it's good for horses on the bag, then it must be good for horses. And I go, well, I pick up plenty of things that say they're low sugar or low fat, and they certainly aren't when you actually read the label. The equine feed industry is no different. They are allowed to market and they are allowed to advertise and they are allowed to tell outright lies on the bag in the sake of marketing. I see so many feeds that are called Calm and Cool, or, you know, Cool and Easy or Calm and Easy, and they might be full of cereal grain, which is certainly not a calming ingredient for a horse. And just because it's called Calm and Cool doesn't mean it necessarily is Calm and Cool. So we just need to be discerning and look out for our horses.
So we've got to look past the pretty packaging and the slogans exactly. And look at that feed label. Yeah,
exactly right.
What else should we know about feed labels?
I think just it's really important to read it and make sure that you know what's in your horse's feed and that you're choosing the appropriate feed for your particular type of horse. And any good reputable feed company will have a nutritionist or a feed rep that you can talk to ask these questions, and they should be happy to answer your questions and really give you that knowledge. If you're not, you know, you don't have enough knowledge on your own, which is absolutely fair, you should be able to talk to a feed rep or talk to a nutritionist, and you can always consult an independent equine nutritionist for more help if you're concerned that you're not feeding the right thing. And I whenever I give my talks, I always ask people who has an equine vet, and everyone raises their hand. And then I ask them if they have an equine nutritionist, and it's very rare that I see hands go up, but it is really something I would consider important, especially if you have an older horse or a horse with metabolic issues or a sport horse, that you are having your diet analyzed by somebody who's knowledgeable in the field. And your veterinarian may not be. They may not have spent enough time teaching themselves about nutrition, or it may not be an interest for them. But having somebody look at your diet and make sure that it's appropriate for your horse and that you're buying good quality feed, you know, one time a year or once every couple of years, you will get so much out of just having someone look at your diet for your horse. So I always recommend that to people.
Well, and it makes sense. We put all this effort and money and time into making our horses the best and healthiest they can be. And it's like, what are you doing every single day, multiple times a day? You're feeding them.
Yeah, so you might and that well part's know. Really important. It's like putting the wrong fuel in your car. It is just not going to run as well.
Absolutely.
But I will, as you said, be talking about this at Equine Affair. And so I hope that we'll see a lot of people actually turn out in person, and I can meet my fans and meet my question askers. And then we'll talk a lot more in depth about how to read a feed label and how to make choices for particular types of horses, whether that's our older horses or our hard keepers or our metabolic horses, because it is challenging. There's so many feeds out there and there's so much marketing, and we need to be able to cut through all of that and actually make a good choice for our horses.
Absolutely. So Dr. Roddy will be at booth 3116 in the Mallory South. So that's part of the trade show at Equine Affair. And she'll be with Poseidon Animal Health. And not only are you doing presentations for us, you guys are on our official schedule, but you're doing little talks and demos at your booth, right?
Yeah, so we're going to try to do a lunchtime Q&A every day, and we'll have that. We'll put that on a sandwich board out the front. People can come and ask us questions and certainly talk about our products, but also just ask general health questions, gut health questions, questions about their horse. And then we'll do a couple of talks through the course of the show on bigger topics. But yeah, we're trying to get out as much education as we can and help people really make the right choices for their horses.
Just visit feedsentinel.com/findmyfeed and answer the questions about your horse, and you'll be guided to a feed that best fits their needs. With Sentinel's full line of 100% extruded feed, you'll find the perfect fit for your horse no matter their age or activity level. That's feedsentinel.com/findmyfeed.
And our next guest is Joylene Seymour, or Joy, as she likes to be called. And Joylene is a mounted games clinician. She's a bit of a Jill of all trades. She's coming to Equine Affair to share all about her passion for mounted games and teach you how to do them too. So we are excited to have Joy on to talk about games.
Not just for pony clubbers anymore.
Well, hi, Joy. Welcome to our show.
Hey.
We're excited to have you on because you're here to talk about something really fun, which is mounted games. So how'd you get into that?
So when my kids were very little, I was a 4-H kid. I never did pony club when I was a kid. But after high school, I went and was a working student in England and took up eventing. So I wanted my kids to be like involved in eventing. So I thought pony club was the best place for my kids when they were little. And the first experience that we had with the local pony club was the regional mounted games rally. And my kids absolutely loved it, thought it was the best thing ever, and decided that that was what they wanted to do. So my daughter started playing games, and then my second daughter started playing games. My son never really got into it, although he did join pony club. But my oldest daughter ended up playing games all through Pony Club and did the International Mounted Games Exchange through Pony Club. She went they played in Canada that year. And because the kids were playing, I just started playing at home, practicing at home. And the organization that we play with, Mounted Games Across America, has a specific division for adults. At the time, it was called Fossils. So yeah. I decided I would try playing Fossils.
I love that too. I have to correct it.
It was like 14 years ago.
I feel that playing. Actually, the Fossils.
Yeah.
I kind of feel it. Well,
they changed the name. I felt really bad. They've changed it to Over 25.
Oh, that's not as fun as Fossils.
I know. Fossils was great, but some people were insulted. So.
Oh, well, then they shouldn't be playing games.
Right, exactly. They're taking it way too seriously.
That's right. Yes. I agree.
Yeah. I love it. It could be fossils over fences. It could be flying fossils. It could be, oh my gosh.
I love flying fossils. That's a good one too. I like that one.
Flying fossils. I think you should petition to change it back because over 25.
We'll sign that petition. We'll sign it.
Over 25 is boring. Yes.
Right. I'm like, over 25 is not a fossil. And what are you saying exactly? So that's how you got into this. You got your kids into it, and then they got you into mounted games.
Right, right. Yep. And I started playing at home on my 16 one-hand thoroughbred, and he wasn't having fun doing that. He was more of a dressage queen, and he decided that games was really not for him. So then I started riding the kids' ponies and eventually got my own pony.
Well, I was going to ask, that's going to be one of my questions, is can any horse be good at mounted games? Or is there a specific type or height, perhaps, that is better for a mounted game pony?
Ponies definitely have an advantage because many of the games involve reaching things that are either on the ground or close to the ground, reaching things in buckets, or jumping on and off. The more agile people can vault. I don't vault. But my daughter can get on a galloping horse. She can jump on and off while the pony's galloping. So you don't want anything tall. The International Mounted Games Association, the IMGA, restricts the height and says that nobody can play on a mount that's over 15 hands. Our national organization, the one we play with, the MGAA, they allow taller horses, but most people play on ponies. Even the taller people might play on like a 14 three hand pony, you know. I mean it's 14 three hands, sort of like a small horse, but it's to your advantage to ride the smallest pony that you can fit on. Pony Club and IMGA both have weight rules. They follow 20%, so the rider and their equipment has to fall within 20% of the horse's weight.
Is there a particular pony? I'm a pony guy. Is there a particular pony breed that's better at it?
Shetlands? We've always chosen our ponies by price.
like most of us do.
We've had a lot of free ponies. But so I think that any pony that's fast and agile and wants to play games is good at it. There's a lot of the spotted ponies, I call them POAs.
Yeah.
People say POA,
yep.
Pony of the Americas, the smaller Appaloosas. There's a lot of like quarter pony types. I rode for 12 years, played on a Connemara.
Yeah.
And she absolutely loved it because she's just so smart. And I have another Connemara coming along. And the nice thing about my Connemaras is I'm tall. I weigh about 175 pounds. My Connemaras are big enough and chunky enough to take my weight. My new Connemara is only 13.3, but he's built like a tank. So he's big legs.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have a problem.
Like riding a couch a little bit.
So it's easier. And because it's easier with a shorter pony.
So for people who are unfamiliar, what are the different, like what is encompassed by mounted games? Maybe talk a little bit about that. Like, are you getting on and off a whole lot? Are you racing around? What are you doing in those games?
So mounted games is a team sport so you have four to five people on your team. It's a minimum of four. Four people play each race. You can have a team of five. We're racing head to head. So there are, in the bigger competitions, there will be eight lanes of ponies racing head to head. It's not timed. It's all whoever crosses the finish line first. You don't get points off for anything unless if you make a mistake in a game, then your team is eliminated from that game. And you don't correct it, then you're eliminated from that game. But you can make a mistake and fix it and still win the game.
Ooh, like that.
It's not at all subjective. That's one of the reasons that I play it, that one of the reasons I like it. So Mounted Games was invented by Prince Philip in 1957. They had the first Mounted Games championship for the Prince Philip Cup in England at the Horse of the Year show. Back then, though, Pony Club said that riders could not compete over the age of 14. So another gentleman, Mr. Norman Patrick, who was then the chairman of the Pony Club Mounted Games Committee in England, felt that there was a need for an organization where riders could continue to play the games past this age. So he started the British Mounted Games Association, and then IMGA. There are now, oh, I don't know how many countries competing. I know France, Germany, England, Ireland, Wales has their own teams, the United States, Canada, Australia, South Africa, New Zealand. These are all countries that have and send teams.
Wow.
There's, I'm sure there's more too. And it's, because it's a team sport, it really helps to have other people around you that play games so that you can play together.
Yeah, it's not really something you can do virtually with each other or remotely with each other.
Right. I mean, we, so there's like maybe four or five of us here in New Hampshire, and we try to practice together as much as we can. And my daughter and I ride practice together at home, and there's other, a couple of other members who, you know, a couple of other people who play together, and, you know, we try to all get together when we can.
I love that. And then are you bringing your Connemaras with you to Equine Affair when you're presenting with us?
So the mare that I rode for 12 years, Chloe, retired at the end of last year, actually after the versatile horse and rider thing. That was the last thing she did. Yeah. I've retired her. We were hoping to do trail riding with her this year, but she's just been really stiff and a little sore. So she's 24, and I figured it was probably time for her to. But my new, the horse that I'm riding now is an Arabian, and I will be bringing her to Equine Affair.
Awesome.
She's, I think, a 14 or 15-year-old Arabian.
So I bet Arabians would like, would be good at mounted games and would like that because they're agile and they're fast and they have that.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's cool.
I think I know a couple of people who have off-the-track Arabians that they use for mounted games.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Do they? So here's a question. Glenn, do they do mounted games for people who drive? Like, can you do driven mountain games?
I guess that would be a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, that would be a whole different ballgame. I mean, there are, like, the obstacle races, right, for driving. Like, the obstacle... What is it? The obstacle section of combined driving,
also invented by
the one
Prince
with the balls
Philip.
And the cones. Yeah.
Prince Philip just had too much time on his hands, and he put it to good use though for us horse people. Okay,
right.
But like Glenn would scooter like that, or would he be like, no way?
Oh, I think he would have liked it. Now he doesn't like being ridden, so that's a problem. But
yeah,
he loves going through things in the woods and, you know, challenging bears and, you know, all that stuff. He thinks that's great fun.
Yeah.
Hackney ponies are a little bit that way. They just they think that nothing's going to stop them. So
yes,
yeah, and nothing that's really true. Does actually.
Those are the best kind of ponies for games.
I bet. Yeah. And, you know, I think that you're right. Probably that sweet spot with 13 and a half to 14 hands is probably perfect.
Yeah, unless you're smaller. You know, if you're a small rider, you can ride a smaller pony.
Yeah, that's true.
Small and light. And, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The smaller ponies, the kids on smaller ponies are just amazing because they will just reach down and pick things up off the ground. But I rode this summer, I rode on a team with a young man he's got to be 14 or 15 because that's the age he was on the Pony Club Mounted Games Associate, you know, the Mounted Games Exchange team this year. And he was riding a 15 hand halflinger and he picked stuff up off the ground on that horse.
Wow.
And they're wide too. I mean, that's the other problem with halflingers.
That's flexible.
Yeah.
You know, really we talked about this, Joy. We talked about this years ago. Do you think why aren't there not more people doing this?
Oh,
is it just awareness?
I don't know. I mean, it's funny because when we first started in Pony Club, which was in the early 2000s, like maybe 2005, the Central New England Region Games Rally was huge. And when we went to championships, the Pony Club championships for the first time in Kentucky, that arena, the Coliseum, their big indoor arena, was packed. The entire place was full of spectators watching the mounted games. because they had the international exchange there that year. And everybody loved games. And then, I don't know, it's got a lot to do, I think, with the attitude of the people involved in Pony Club and whether or not they're pushing it. Because most of our games writers come through Pony Club. That's, I would say, the vast majority of the people who are playing games in the U.S. right now were Pony Clubbers.
And that makes sense, right? That they had fun, they're just going to continue it.
Yeah. And I mean, there are kids that are coming along whose parents played games and therefore they're playing games, but they're also still, they're in Pony Club too. So it was definitely a very popular Pony Club sport. It's kind of faded out a little bit. I think it's harder to, in general, not as many people have their ponies at home. Not as many people have ponies. I see a lot of kids mounted on big horses.
It's true, because you usually, when you're growing up, you want to graduate to a big horse, right? That's the goal. So I get that. Where can people learn more? Backwards. Is there a website?
Yes. So we have the International Mounted Games Association is mounted-games.org. MGAA, which is in the United States, is all one word, mountedgames.org.
Okay. All right. We'll and put then, that of course, if you go to
the Pony Club website as well, has a section on mounted games.
And you're gonna, and so, what kind of fun things are you going to do at Equine Affair?
We're going to run a demo. Right now, we only have 5 riders. We need one more rider. We're going to try to run 3 lanes of pairs, because games can be played either as teams or in pairs. So we were going to try to do pairs. If we can come up with one more rider, we'll have 3 pairs. So we'll have 3 lanes going head to head. And our announcer will talk about the games as we're playing them, explain what we're doing, and talk about the ponies. The pony that I'm bringing, we got for free. My daughter's pony is my mare is a 14-hand Arabian that we got for free. My daughter's pony is a 13-2-hand POA that she got for free. And I mean, it's just, there's a lot of rescue ponies in games, a lot of ponies that basically nobody wanted for anything else.
That's good, though. That's good.
Yeah.
And that's happening, it looks like, 3:30 on Saturday, November the 8th. So if you want to see George in action and see this, it's at 3:30 on Saturday. And I just happen to know it's going to be a great one, because I've seen you in action. You competed in the VHRC, like you mentioned, on Chloe. What was it, like last year or the year before?
Last year. Yeah, last fall. Yeah.
So that's a little bit different, or is it different? Is it different from mounted games? How did it compare?
Well, I mean, there was the reason I wanted to try it was because Chloe is such a great games pony, and she's also a good trail pony. And I mean, she's pretty much up for anything except if it involves water. But she loves, I mean, she's just super, super smart. And she's really, really good about stuff like opening and closing gates and going over bridges. I mean, she'll do all of that. And she's a super good jumper. And I thought, oh, well, this will be fun. We'll go and do this. You know, we'll pick stuff up and put stuff down like we do when we're playing games. And I didn't realize, you know, I had watched people do it, but I didn't realize how hard it was going to be to remember what to do.
Yeah.
And I got a little lost and we ran out of time. But she was really good. She tried really hard. The one thing she did not want to do was step into the pool, which didn't have water in it. And we had practiced that at home, because I know she hates water. We had actually practiced with water at home. But she was like, nope, that looks suspiciously like water. She would not go in it. But the task was to put your pony in the pool and then run over and ring a bell that was like, I don't know, 50 feet away or something. Yeah. And I just parked her next to the pool and ran over and rung the bell and went back. And she just stood there waiting. So, I mean, she could do the task other than getting in the pool. She was not going to do that.
Yeah, they really, some of them love the pool. Some of them are just like, I am not putting my feet anywhere near that thing. And we almost always incorporate that. And I know why Kogi does it. It's because some of those horses love it. And some of them are like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
But yours was one of the few runs I got to watch from start to finish last year, because usually I'm running in and out, and it was just really fun to watch you. It was clear that you had done something like that before, because I didn't know then that you were a mounted games person. And I was just like, they've done something like this before and they're having fun and they're making it exciting. And so I really enjoyed watching you. I know you timed out, but it was still fun to watch you guys. So great job.
And I was
like
trying to ask the audience, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
I have too many answers. So Chloe doesn't belong to me. She belongs to a Connemara breeder. And Kim was saying, you need to write it on your arm, write down everything on your arm. And I'm like, I don't have room on my arm to write all that down. But if I was going to do it again, I would put like athletic tape on my arm and write down what to do at each obstacle. Because seriously, once I got in there, it's like, it just all went out of my head.
Yeah. I'm always amazed at how well they do. Cause it's a long, long thing. And there's a lot to remember.
Yes, it's really complicated. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was so much fun. And you guys, you have got to see Joy and meet her in person at Equine Affair. We're just really thrilled to get to have a mounted games clinic. So thank you, Joy, for coming on to share.
Oh, you're welcome. And we will do, like, after our demo, we'll do a pony meet and greet. We'll bring the ponies over to the wall and let people pet them. The ponies love attention. So, yeah.
That would be
perfect.
They'll
be happy to be talked to about it.
Well, the entries are in, the dates are set, and now we just need you there to cheer on the competitors at Equine Affair. Sponsored by Chewy, the Versatile Horse and Rider Competition is happening Friday, November the 7th during Equine Affair in Massachusetts. And if you're coming over the weekend, you'll want to catch the Breed Bonanza happening Sunday, November 9th, sponsored by Sentinel, by Kent and Blue Seal. And of course, we've got plenty of other fabulous activities waiting for you at Equine Affair, too. That's at the Eastern States Exposition in West Springfield, Massachusetts. And tickets are on sale now at equineaffair.com. Come and see us.
Well, of course, you can follow the Equine Affair podcast. Just search for Equine Affair on your podcast player. And this episode every month is separated out. So if you want to go back and listen to past Equine Affair episodes, just search Equine Affair on your podcast player. Of course, it's part of Horses in the Morning, but that way you can get it separated if you just want to listen to these episodes. Jamie and I will be back tomorrow on Horses in the Morning. It's really bad ads time, so we'll be here tomorrow with a bunch of those. And, of course, you can have all of the Horse Radio Network shows in one feed. We have 30 shows that are active, and there's one feed. It's called the Horse Radio Network All Shows feed. So if you want to get every episode that we put out, all 60 to 80 a month, you can subscribe to that feed and get all the episodes that we do. And of course, you can find all the details about Equine Affair at equineaffair.com. We'll see you one more time before Equine Affair.
Yep, you'll see me one more time in October, and then I'll see you, well, not you, Glenn, but I'll see everybody at Equine Affair.